session number 13444, reel number 2.
Mr. Bilton, reel 2.
Yes. And it was the marshalling yard at Traps. Now that one, we had an absolute full bomb load, I'll never forget it, of £11,500. We had 11,500 and 1,400 gallons of petrol, and it was made up of 7 £500 and 6 £1,000. That was the heaviest bomb load we'd ever taken. And after the operation, the marshalling yard at Traps was never used again. It was quite an easy trip. There was very, very little flak. It was very light, no fighter trouble. We did 5 hours 40 minutes, and there was bad weather at the aerodrome, and we were diverted to Harwell. And we spent the night at Harwell, and we left the next day back to base.
Now here you've given me a sheet headed Target Turken relating to this Trap parade on the 6th of March 1945. Wow. Can you tell me what this sheet signifies?
Well, that is the marshalling yards there. Those are the flares, the photograph flares that we drop to illuminate the target so we can take a photograph. And from that they could photograph on the headings that we were on. They could tell you exactly where those bombs straddled the target, and the whole load went right across the marshalling yards.
So you got a copy of the photograph?
Of the photograph. Every crew member was presented with a copy of the photograph.
As a means of congratulation?
More or less that you'd got the whole 15 bombs right across the marshalling yards.
Any other marshalling yards operations that you did?
Well, you know, the next one I went to was, the next operation I did was another gardening trip to Kiel. We did mine in the entrance to Kiel Harbour. The next one was on the 25th of March. We went to Olnoy. That was quite an easy trip. The marshalling yard, no trouble. Then on April, our skipper had been promoted to squadron leader, and we were posted to 434 squadron, where he became B flight commander.
Where was 434 squadron?
At Croft. It was a satellite aerodrome of Middleton St George. It was one that was built during the wartime use, whereas Middleton St George was a peacetime aerodrome. The next marshalling yard we went to was Lille, and that was a quiet trip. And that was on the 9th of April. And we went on the 26th of April to Villeneuve St George, the French target. And on the 29th, we had a short gardening trip to the Frisian Islands. The mines we were laying were supposed to be for a convoy that was coming through, and we laid the mines and the convoy was coming through. There was quite a bit of flak from the flak ships. That was then.
Were you hit?
No, we had no trouble. We seemed to be lucky again. There was a lot of flak from the flak ships, but we had nothing, no holes whatsoever. And coming to May, the 1st of May, we went to St. Ghislain. And then on the 27th, we went to La Crepit. They were quiet trips, 5 hours and 4.5 hours. We did, on June the 15th, we flew in JJ on a daylight to Boulogne, So you could see the flak there. And when we were going in, there was one aircraft coming out with the whole of his starboard wing in flames. Never knew what happened to him.
Was that the first daylight raid?
That was the first daylight I'd done, yes.
How did you feel about that compared with the night raids?
Well, you more confident because you could see what was happening. And you knew you had fighter cover. It was just the flak. But then, flak you got used to. It never really bothered people unless you got hit with it badly.
What was the date of that Boulogne operation?
15th of June.
So this was after D-Day?
After D-Day. I was on leave on D-Day. We were. And the next operation was to Deutschmont on the 21st of June.
What was the target in the Boulogne raid?
The Boulogne raid, we were dropping a bomb that exploded as soon as it hit the water to cause waves to go into the pens to destroy the their MTB boats and that.
Do you think it worked?
Well, by all accounts, yes. By the reports that we received afterwards, it had been a successful raid. And the docks got a good pass in as well. And in July, we started off the 1st of July, we went to a place called Bernays. And when we got there, there was no PFF markings, so we bombed on G. And there was quite a bit of flak, and I lost all the hydraulics. And we had to land using emergency for undercarriage, but I could never close the bomb doors. They were open all the way back and all the way for landing. And I had to use full emergencies for the getting the undercarriage down and the use of the flaps.
When was that?
That was the 1st of June. We went in Kiel Queenie that night.
1st of July?
1st of July, sorry. They sent us back to the same target on the 6th of July, to Bernays. We went in G. George that time, and it was a quiet trip.
Where is Bernays?
It's in France, that's all I can. And after that, we went to Cannes on the daylight, and on the night operation on the 18th of the 7th. We took off at 3:30 in the morning. That was when they started the big push and the breakthrough at Cannes.
Was that a particularly big raid, a mass raid?
Yes, that was a mass raid. They practically destroyed Cannes that night. And the army moved forward. And they never stopped moving after that.
Do you have any memories of that raid?
Yes, all I can remember is a dead, easy raid. Flak, not bothered, no fighters, no nothing. It was just like a cross country.
Were you aware of all the other planes?
Yes, they were all so close together, all bombing on one area. You could see them, even though it was that time. About 2 hours. It would be about 5:30, just dusk coming up.
So you didn't have any opposition?
Nothing at all, nothing whatsoever. It was just like flying from here to Jersey on your holidays. No opposition whatsoever.
Do you think you hit your target?
Well, we must have done, because the army never stopped moving. They took Cannes. The next job after that, it was a rough one. It was Hamburg. That was the 28th.
What happened then?
Well, we were in the second wave, and we were a bit late. And we were at a scheduled height of bombing at 17,000 feet. And there was somebody else above us. And they dropped the bombs. And we had, on our bombing room, we just had to dive starboard and get out of the way of his bombs. Because we should have got the lot. Because the waves had separate heights for bombing. And we were late. 2 minutes late. We were at 17, and the next wave was at 17.5, and that was it. There was quite a bit of flak at Hamburg, but that was the most terrifying thing. Seeing a full bomb load up there, and the skipper just dived starboard as we were on the bombing run. Where our bombs went, we don't know.
Was it common for planes to be hit by bombers above them?
I don't think so. I think it occasionally happened, but this was too close.
What about collisions between bombers?
I never saw any. Never saw any at all. I think they did happen, but they were very few and far between.
And then
after that, August was a very busy month. Our skipper had been promoted because our original Wing Commander Bartlett, had been lost, had been shot down and killed in action. And our skipper was promoted to become Wing Commander of 434 Squadron. On the 1st of August, we took J-Jig to a Quet in France. And there was no PFF markings, so the full bomb load was brought back. We brought the whole load back. On the 3rd of
August. How dangerous was it to bring bombs back?
Well, they weren't fused. I mean, they weren't fused until you were bombing. Didn't press the selector switches, so they'd be all right. It was just that we had a heavy load for landing. After that, on the 3rd, we took J-Jig again to the Fort de Neuf, which was for fuel dumps. And the 4th of August, again in J-Jig, we went to some caves that were just outside Paris, where the V2 rockets were assembled. And that was heavily defended. It was a daylight off, and we were hit by flak. We got a few holes, we were caught in seam-predicted flak. We diverted that on the 4th to Dalton.
Was this a V2 place or a V1 place?
V2 place, where they were assembling where they assembled the rockets.
And where was it?
Just outside Paris. About what we could understand from the briefing, there were more or less mushroom caves and that. Just outside there. Then on the 5th, we went to St. Louis de Resserand. Then on the 8th, we went to a fuel dump just outside at Fort de Chantilly. And that was hit, and there was black smoke when we left up to 15,000 feet.
What do you think you'd hit there at Chantilly?
It was a fuel dump. And on the 9th, we went to Labatec. On the 12th of August, we went to Brunswick, Germany. Now that raid, according to recent records, was a complete failure, as everyone bombed on H2S. There was no markers, went down. It was everyone bombed individually, and there was no concentration.
Did you feel at the time that it was a failure?
Well, it seemed to be a failure because there was no concentration of fires or anything. Then on the 14th, we did the Army Co-op, where the German divisions were trapped at Falaise. Now that was a very easy trip. There was no opposition whatsoever. The only thing wrong that the Canadian group bombed their own troops. The Canadian army had advanced past the markers. And of course, there was a few killed.
Was yours one of the bombers that dropped on the Canadians, do you think?
But it wasn't the Air Force's fault. It was the Army had advanced past the markers. And the last trip
that was the 14th, was it?
That was the 14th of August. We took off at 12:40, and it was a 5-hour, 10-minute job. And the last trip I did was the 25th of August. We went to Brest to soften it up so the Yanks could take it, and that was quite easy. There was no trouble at all. I think they were more or less giving in, and that was on the 25th of August. It was bad weather back at base, and we got diverted to Coney Island. And we spent the night at Coney Island, then came back the next day, and we were told that was it, we'd finished our tour.
Had you done 30?
We'd done 34 and one sea sweep. The skipper, the navigator and the bomb aimer were each awarded a DFC, and myself, the wireless operator Jackie Bennett from Newcastle, and Jimmy Silverman, the rear gunner, granted a commission. That was our reward.
What happened to you then?
Well, after that I was posted down to Bruntingthorpe, which was 29 OTU, and I was instructing there on engine handling. I did very little flying. I had a week at Blackpool on an air sea rescue course, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I only flew twice in the 6 months I was at OTU. I wasn't ever keen on Wellingtons.
Why not?
Well, the Wellingtons were clapped out. And I volunteered to go back on a second tour, and I went in April 45 with the Flight Lieutenant Kennedy. He made a crew up from 29 OTU, and we went to 1651 conversion unit at Wolf Fox Lodge.
Why did you volunteer for a second tour?
I didn't like 29 OTU, and I didn't like what bit of flying I did do.
Why didn't you like that OTU?
Well, there was a little bit of too much bull. The group captain in charge was an ex-Cranwell boy, and I think he thought it was still 1938 and not 1944.
So you preferred to risk your life than have the bull?
Have the bull, yes.
Did you go back on ops in the end?
Well, we did our conversion unit onto Lancasters, and we were picked out, unfortunately, to go to War Boys for PFF training. So by the time we'd finished the PFF training, the war had finished. We had special training at War Boys, then we had to go through another course of automatic gun lane turret, which was new to the gunners. By the time we'd finished those courses, the war had finished. We finished up at 156 Squadron at Upwood, and that was quite enjoyable, because we took ground crew on what they called a Cook's Tour. We used to fly them over Germany, up the Ruhr, and show them all the damage that they'd helped to do in maintaining the aircraft. I did two of those Cook's Tours in June, and we did a little bit of flying. I did an air test for the Royal Air and Lord establishment, another Cook's Tour. We did a post-mortem to Denmark, where they did an actual, like an operation to Denmark to see how the German radar system worked, and that was on the 29th of June 45. That was a 5.5 hour
testing the radar defences?
Yes, of the Germans had. Then we just did local flying, and then for 3 days we were dumping the 21st, the 24th and the 27th of July. We were dumping incendiaries into the North Sea that were no good. Then in August of 44, the 1st of August, we did a passenger trip to Frankfurt and Nuremberg, taking crew, ground crew in and bringing ground crew out. Then we had a trip which made me want to go back to Italy when I got married. It was on the 15th of August 45, we went to Bari in Italy, and we had 3 days where we crammed 20 of the 8th Army boys into a Halifax, into a Lancaster fuselage, give them a sick bag and put their kit in the bomb bays and flew them home. That was thoroughly enjoyable, seeing Italy.
Can I ask you about the difference between Lancasters and Halifaxes? What did you feel about flying in the two?
Well, on a Lancaster, the flight engineer did the work of the second pilot. He did the throttles, looked after the undercarriage controls, flaps and everything. But as regards flying, I still like the Halifax, especially the Halifax Mark III with the Hercules Centaurus engines. It was a marvellous aircraft. There was more room in it. It could carry a bomb load of 12,000 pounds, but it couldn't carry the big bombs because they hadn't the depth of the bomb bays. But I still liked the Halifax. I think it was because I did all my operations in them, and I got through a tour with it.
Did the Halifax have any disadvantages?
I don't think so. Not the later ones. The first ones, had a tendency to stall, but they altered that by altering the rudder system.
What did you learn in the Pathfinder course?
I took a bomb aimers course and learned how to drop bombs. That's the only difference.
How did you do that?
Well, they give you a concentrated course on dropping practice bombs. And that was about the only difference.
Now, can I ask you some general questions about operations in the war? What was morale like amongst the bomber crews as far as you personally experienced it?
Very good, very high indeed. I only ever knew one person who went LMF, and he was a member of our crew, but everyone else enjoyed the life. It was a good life. I mean, admitted it was very, very dangerous, but it was a clean life. You came back to a clean bed, and you came back to good food, and you were trapped well. You were given leave every 6 weeks. You were given extra rations when you came home. It was a dangerous job, but they looked after you, and discipline wasn't severe on bomber squadrons, not on the Canadian group anyhow. The air crew was quite relaxed.
Could you see the signs of LMF in this chap?
No, we couldn't. It was only the second trip after we got a good hiding, and it never said anything on the night when we did the emergency landing at Woodbridge. But when we came back the next day, I met him in the sergeant's mess in the afternoon, and he said what had happened, and I never saw him again. He was off the squadron as quick as that.
So you couldn't think of any reason why he should have gone out?
No, none at all. He was a mid-upper gunner, and that was just it. He just stood a sponging.
What did the rest of the crew think about him going LMF? Did you have sympathy, or did you look down on him?
I don't think they looked down on him. They were just pleased that he'd gone so quick and nobody could dwell on the subject. And that when we got two new gunners, and as I say, we were away within 7 days of that operation on Stuttgart, 18th to the 26th, and we took two spare gunners, and after that we got two permanent gunners.
Were the aircrew superstitious? Did they have any lucky charms or anything like that?
Yes, I've still got my little St. Christopher cross, and three of us always emptied our bladder on the starboard wheel before we took off. Myself, the rear gunner, and the wireless operator.
This is a superstition, was it?
Always did it. Always, whether it was a daylight or a night off, whether the groupie was there or anybody, it was always emptied against the starboard wheel.
Did other crews do that?
I think other crews always went in certain order, pilot first and like that.
What were the briefings like? Can you describe the scene when you got the briefings?
Well, when it was the Berlin, and you looked up and everyone said Berlin, everyone, oh, that was it. And then you just sat back in silence and let them all give you the information. The German targets, when you saw them, when you saw the red lines leading, you knew you were in for a warm night. The French targets, everyone, I was happy.
They clapped?
Well, they would clap and cheer when they said Cannes or St. Louis restaurant like that. I mean, compared to the German targets, they were easy. The only targets that we didn't really like, the whole crew, were the mine laying stooges. Because the majority of them were so long, and there were so few of you, so you felt so exposed. I mean, the Germans would probably leave you alone, but then the next time, they'd probably lose 4 or 5 aircraft out of 20 odd. They would really come down on you like a ton of bricks. And leave you alone. But when they hit you, they hit you.
What do you feel about the criticism that's been launched against Bomber Command since the war?
I think it's people who've got no idea about a war. They have no idea what the targets were like. Bombing had to be done. It was the only way of offensive against the Germans. And I don't think the taking into effect the amount of damage that we did do, the amount of people that were tied down. There was over 1 million people tied down in German defence. There were 30,000 anti-aircraft guns, and over nearly 10,000 of those were 88mm. Now if those 10,000 88mm had been used on the beaches of Normandy, the channel would have been blood red. They had the German defences had all the ammunition they wanted up to within 6 weeks of the war. They were never short. They rationed the army, but they never rationed the local defence. And after all, we did reduce production. And if you reduce production by 12.5% of Tiger tanks, it's a heck of a lot. Because there was nothing that could touch a Tiger. Now I think the criticism has been very unfair. Because the boys went through hell.
When you were at these stations, how and where did you spend your spare time?
Well, at Middleton, St. George and Croft, we used to go into Darlington. And we all had one particular pub, the Fleece. And that's where we spent our time at the Fleece. But I was up there about 89 years ago, and it's been knocked down, the old Fleece pub.
Did you put any kind of trophies or anything like that up in the bar?
No, we just went there to drink and sing and other things.
Were there any breaches of security with people telling girlfriends about?
Not to my knowledge, no. If you were going up there on the for a night out, you didn't know anything, because the station would be closed if there was a full ops on. There'd only probably be a few ground crew, but the air crew wouldn't be allowed out, and most of the telephone lines were shut down, were closed. You couldn't make outside calls if there was ops on.
Did the German Air Force ever attack these airfields?
No, not to my knowledge, not whilst I was there.